All right, we are, we're going to try to finish up lesson 11 today in this study, which is focusing on primarily foreign mission work. And then I anticipate we have lesson 12 that we should be able to finish in the next 2 weeks and so forth. So that's kind of where we're going over the next few weeks, try to finish up this study that we've been focused on. And so this morning, we're in part three of this, What Can I Do? And it focuses on encouragement. Last week, Dale was focusing on the part about prayer. And so this morning, we're going to continue on with this as soon as I turn my phone off here, because I don't want it to ring while we're in the middle of class here. So let's talk about encouragement and encouraging and the need to encourage. The statement here, the first one, is a fact that everyone needs encouragement, right? But perhaps no one needs it any more than our foreign missionaries. It is a fact that everyone needs encouragement. Agree or disagree? Okay? One of the things that I talk with people all the time in counseling with is the idea of the importance of encouraging one another, okay? And so when we look at this idea of encouragement, how big does encouragement really need to be? Any idea on that? In other words, when we talk about encouraging someone, what are the things that we need to do to encourage someone? How big does that encouragement really have to be?
It's on the person and the situation.
Okay.
You know, sometimes it can be a very minor thing of just a kind word or a thanks or we appreciate what you're doing here. And then sometimes it needs to be a little more substantial.
Okay. Go ahead.
Just say, you know, if somebody's dealing with personal loss or something, then anything will help, but sometimes you need a little bit larger gesture, I think.
Okay, all right. For most people, according to surveys, for most people, it is not really the size of the award or that kind of a thing that really makes the difference. It's the fact that they were acknowledged and that something was said. It's, you know, And it is because we all need, you know, that pat on the back or that attaboy or that attagirl, you know, from time to time. We need that. Especially, Dale, as you pointed out, depending on the circumstance and the situation, the more difficult it is, you know, if there's a lot of grief involved in the circumstance or the situation the person is facing, they might need a little bit more or what have you. But the fact that somebody recognized and paid attention to someone is what most people say makes all the difference in the world. Okay? So, again, it's not always the size of the gesture as it is the fact that the gesture was made. As long as it is what?
Sincere.
What?
Long and sincere.
Thank you. As long as it's genuine or sincere. Okay?
Yes, we've had this discussion before. Dale and I have.
Okay.
Discussion ended up on Facebook. One of the worst things you can tell someone, I think, and I don't want to hear it, whenever you're going through something really hard, it's all God's plan. Because it makes it sound like he's up there planning harm to me or he really wants to hurt me. Or, you know, these platitudes that sound like a greeting card.
Right.
Bloom where you're planted. You'll be fine. That kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
The best thing to just say is something that acknowledges that you that there's something bad there. I'm sorry for your loss, or what can I do to help you?
Right.
Or is there anything I can do to help you? But the main thing is we can't be dismissive.
Right.
And use one of these pat phrases.
Right. Okay.
Throw it out there.
Okay. Exactly. People need encouragement, but they need that encouragement to be genuine. They need it to be sincere. Again, it doesn't matter the size of that. It's a matter of the fact that somebody took notice, somebody recognized, somebody took the time to say, hey, I'm thinking about you, you know, I'm sorry for your loss, is there anything I can do? sometimes, and we have to be really, really careful about this, when we're trying to encourage someone who is going through some grief, a difficult time, one of the things that we oftentimes say without thinking about it is, I know how you feel.
Yeah, you don't. Even if you've lost the exact same person in your family, yeah, structure. That happened with me when my father died, and we did not have a close relationship. Yeah. It was very contentious. And this woman at our church felt the need to come over and just take care of me, because when her father died, she felt a totally different way, and it was not.
Yeah.
It did not help me at all.
Well, we just need to be careful about some of those kinds of, you know, statements that just kind of roll off of our tongue without us thinking about it. Sometimes, you know, I have found over the years in ministry that I find myself many times with people saying, look, I don't know how you feel. There's no way I can. Mm-hmm. And in fact, for me, until, 3 years ago when my father died, and then last year when my mother died, I've never really lost anybody close to me. You know, so for me to tell someone who's just lost a loved one, I know how you feel, no, I don't. You know? So we just have to be careful about those kinds of things. But the main thing right here I want you to keep in mind is everyone needs encouragement, but we need to make sure that, as I said, that encouragement is genuine, that it's sincere. And that's what helps people more than anything. Okay? Now, let's talk about in terms of missionaries. Part of the question here is, like, why do foreign missionaries need encouragement? Perhaps maybe more than others.
They might feel alone while they're over there.
Okay. Yeah, missionary work, foreign mission work can be a lonely, lonely job, lonely place to be. Okay. Folks, those folks are oftentimes, they're away from their families for a long period of time. They're with people that they're trying, many of them, they're kind of thrust into a group of folks. They don't even know who they are. They're trying to start, a church or whatever with complete strangers. They are very isolated and very, very much alone. So, yeah, they need a lot of encouragement. What else? Wes?
I would say that the encouragement fuels their motivation.
Okay.
Because they would know that even though they may sometimes feel like they're just turning wheels, but they're not getting no traction.
Okay.
And they're not moving forward, but to know that somebody's behind them and still pushing them and still thinking, backing them up, that,
Most foreign missionaries that I have been associated with, worked with, or what have you, what I have seen them do, and I'm talking about those who will go for an extended period of time. I'm not talking about folks like me that go for 2 weeks and come back home again. They're going for a long period of time. They spend sometimes a couple of years, planning and preparing. One of the primary things is trying to get financial support. That takes a lot of work and a lot of time to get enough financial support to go and do what you're planning to do. But it's trying to, many times learn the foreign language of the place that they're going to. There's a lot involved in preparing before you ever leave to go to a mission field. And for some that I have spoken with that have done that, one of the things that they kind of feel is like they've been in contact with, here in America, they've traveled all over the country, they've gotten support, and people going, yeah, we're glad you're going to do this, we're going to help you, and we're going to support you, people cheering them on, and all those kinds of things. And then they get there to where they're going, and everybody forgets about it. It's like they're gone, and we're doing our thing, and forgot all about them over there. See,
well,
Denise?
It's not just learning another language and stuff. It's living in a different culture.
Oh, yeah.
We had Joe and Ruth had visit our church, our military church, just to get to be around other Americans and have American food, which they couldn't get in the stores in Ibaraki. And then the same thing with our friend Steve Carroll. He was teaching at the, he's fluent, he'd grown up in Japan with his parents were missionaries there. But he and his wife were teaching at the school of preaching there. But they would come in and be with us just so they could be around other Americans. And you don't really realize how much your culture has influence on you till you've been overseas like that. Just one of the first times I was in Ukraine, we were going we were going back to the airport in Kyiv, and we saw these two guys walking down the street, and one of the guys on the bus said, "Those two are Americans," and we could tell by the way they walked.
You
could absolutely tell by the way they were walking.
We Americans, we stand out like a sore thumb in foreign countries. in the many trips that I have made, the most I've gone is, 2 weeks. And I can't wait to get back to have some real American food. You know, it's in Ukraine, specifically in Zhytomyr, where we've been, many times, one of the funny things about it is that some of the restaurants there are trying to do Ukrainian versions of American food.
In Japan.
I remember one time we went to Pizza USA, was the name of the restaurant, and I ordered a pepperoni pizza, and I got a pizza with corn on it.
Yeah.
And I said, corn? Who orders corn on a pizza?
Japanese,
but somewhere in their understandings of what Americans like and so forth, they got the idea that Americans like corn on pizza, and so that's what they were serving. And so it's like, I want to get back home and get a real pizza, again, that's for 2 weeks. So imagine somebody that's gone for, a year or 2 years or 5 years, or, some of these folks have been there for, their life committed to it. One of the things that I have so much appreciated about Eddie and Carol Hendricks is their work that they have done. I haven't talked to Eddie in a little while, but... I know that his Parkinson's has really caused him some problems, so he hasn't been able to do as much as what they were doing. But they, when Eddie retired from full-time preaching, they dedicated themselves to traveling, around the world just to go and visit and encourage foreign missionaries. That was their work. They understood the importance and the necessity of encouraging the missionaries.
To take over the work for them so they could go back
and
to the States.
Sometimes they did that. They would go in and fill in for them while the missionaries were able to even take a vacation, go somewhere, out from the work for a week or two, or whatever. Just understanding that aspect of it. So, what does the Bible tell us about the need for encouragement for everyone? And then apply that to... The discussion concerning foreign missionaries, all right? So the writer of Hebrews, in Hebrews chapter 3, verse 12 says, "See to it, brothers, that none of you has a sinful, unbelieving heart that turns away from the living God, but encourage one another daily, as long as it is called today, so that none of you may be hardened by sin's deceitfulness." All right? So if you look at those two verses, you understand, what is the point here that he wants us to understand about the importance of encouragement?
It has to be done continually or daily.
Okay, it has to be done continually or daily, but why?
You'll fall into sin.
Yeah, there's Satan is always out there, right? He's always out there trying to trip us up and to get us to sin. And when we feel isolated and we're getting discouraged, how much easier is it for him to get us caught up and trapped in sin? And so here the writer is saying, don't allow that to happen to one another. Okay? Don't allow yourself to have a sinful, unbelieving heart. Encourage one another. And the realization that this is something that needs to happen on a regular basis, right? It's not something we do one time and, okay, I encourage someone and now I don't need to do it anymore. Encourage one another daily as long as it is today. So we need to be doing that with one another, but we certainly need to be doing it with those who are in the foreign mission field trying to teach other people and so forth. In chapter 10, okay, in the section that I oftentimes refer to as the lettuce chapters, or the lettuce verses, beginning in verse 19 of chapter 10, he says, "Therefore, brother, since we have confidence to enter the most holy place by the blood of Jesus, by a new and living way, open for us through the curtain, that is his body, and since we have a great priest over the house of God," so those are the conditions. This is saying basically, this is what we have going for us. And since we have all this going for us, he says, first of all, let us draw near to God with a sincere heart in full assurance of faith, having our hearts sprinkled to cleanse us from a guilty conscience and having our bodies washed with pure water. Let us hold unswervingly to the hope we profess, for he who promised is faithful. Let us consider how we may spur one another on toward love and good deeds, and let us not give up meeting together, as some are in the habit of doing, but let us encourage one another, and all the more as you see the day approaching. So here's things that we need to be doing for one another, and one of those is encouraging one another on a regular basis. And again, in this particular statement, he says, encourage one another all the more as what? What event? As you see the day approaching, what day is he talking about? The day of the Lord. The day of the Lord comes back again. As you see that day approaching, you need to be encouraging each other more and more. Why? Because the longer we wait, the easier it is to get discouraged, get impatient. See? And so encourage one another more and more. 1 Thessalonians. In chapter 4, Paul here is writing about the day of the Lord, when the Lord is going to come back again. Here's some things that are going to be taking place. Okay? And he begins that in verse 13. And as he describes all these things that are going to take place when the Lord comes back again, look at verse 18. He says, therefore, encourage each other with these words. Okay? So use the words that concern the coming of the Lord to encourage people, to encourage one another. People can be looking forward to that. He continues on in chapter 5, the same kind of idea here, just continuing with some of those thoughts. And look at what he says in verse 11. Therefore, encourage one another and build each other up just as in fact you are doing. Notice here that he doesn't say, it's great that you encouraged one another. Good job. Okay? Instead, what does he say?
Keep doing it.
He recognizes that they'd already been doing it, but what does he say? Keep on doing it. So is there ever enough encouragement? Another too much? Can we, you know, just, okay, I encouraged, I did that, I don't need to do any more.
That's kind of like the old joke about the guy that his wife said, you never tell me you love me. I told you once and I never changed my mind.
I changed my mind, I'll let you know. That's exactly right. You see, I want to encourage you and I told you that. If I change my mind and want to discourage you, I'll let you know, right? Okay. We need to encourage those who are working in foreign countries and foreign lands that are trying to share the gospel with other people. They need encouragement, and they need it on a regular basis. Okay? The next section on here, section 4, what can I do? And one of the things that that it talks about here, the specific of this is, I need to learn. Okay, What do I need to learn about foreign mission work and foreign missionaries? What do we need to learn about that?
We need to learn the benefits, I guess. I think we
okay.
need to hear the success stories and realize that sometimes that's a more fertile field than we encounter back here.
Okay.
If you've got a place where people are anxious to hear about Jesus, it's a completely different experience than so many times what we get here. Oh, yeah. Heard about that a long time ago.
Okay.
Don't really care.
All right.
So it seems to be the attitude we get here.
All right.
But I think the more that we can hear, that's why it's great when the missionaries come back, that they give a presentation and they talk about what they've been doing, because that encourages us to get fired up about missionary work.
And not only does it encourage us, but it also encourages other people to get involved in the work. Okay, I don't know how many, Denise, you didn't go over to Ukraine with the Glenn Allen group, did you?
No.
Yeah, yours was a whole different.
It was a group from Tennessee that got it started, and one of our elders there in Nebraska.
Okay.
And he and his wife went over there several times and several times since, and I'm kind of hoping that maybe one day Dale and I can pick up where they leave off.
Yeah,
and they get to the
point. Okay.
Where they can't.
Well, the group that we were working with in Ukraine all comes from the work from Glenn Allen. And I don't really know how many people have actually been over there with that group at one time or another. That work's been going on for years and years and years. But every time that they go for, not every time, there's been several times that Tommy and I, just he and I went together, but most every time that they go, that they have gone, they've taken a group of people there. There'll be 6 or 8, 9 people, 10 people that have gone in the group, and oftentimes in those groups there are people that have never gone before.
Yeah, and that's how we did.
Okay.
There'd be some from Texas, some from Tennessee, some from Nebraska.
Yeah.
There were always some newbies. Then there were always some of the older guys that have been multiple times.
Yeah. And so, like, on the trips that I made over there, there's one time that Cindy went with me, another time that my daughter Katie went with me. And we did that. And all kinds of people. So, there's probably about 40 or so people at least, I would think, that have been a part of that work at one time or another. And so my point here is that part of the thing about learning is you come back and you hear those reports and you they're telling, here's what we did, here's what's going on in the work, and other people get encouraged and say, hey, I'd like to be a part of that. And so we have opportunity to learn about what's going on in that particular work, and again, find encouragement to go and be specifically, personally involved in that work, at least for a time. Not that you don't have to make a lifetime commitment, but it's, hey, I've gone and I've had the experience and I've learned a lot of things about mission work. And so those are some important key things about foreign mission work that we need to learn. Okay? We need to learn. Denise? Yeah,
I think we get caught up in this idea, too, that with satellites and internet, that the world is pretty much covered as far as communications. We tend to forget that there are people around us that don't have internet. There was a woman I heard a story the other day, said, I don't have internet at my house, and she had her kid in there with her. So we think, these kids can just learn all this stuff virtually.
Mm-hmm.
We can't go to school. It doesn't work that way. We tend to put blinders on and think everything's like we live. But I have a good friend whose son went to Cambodia a few years back in college as part of a mission, and they were amazed, for one thing, at how tall he was, because he's like 6 feet tall, never seen anybody tall.
Yeah.
And the kids had never seen crayons before, and they called them fire sticks. They were just fascinated with the crayons.
Yeah.
And there were things like, whenever I was in one of the years in Ukraine, I took sidewalk chalk for the kids, mm-hmm. and they got out in front of one of the palaces there, and did this beautiful mural all over the sidewalk. And then here comes this older lady, and I thought, oh no, she's going to complain at us for defacing the sidewalk. She said, I don't want to step on your artwork, it's too beautiful.
Yeah.
That sort of thing. But you just don't know.
Yeah.
What you don't know, there are people that have not had any contact. Not a lot of them that haven't had any contact with the Bible per se, but they've never been taught. And some of them that have never owned a Bible. I told you last time that the big thing for us was we said, you have to come to the gospel meeting at least 3 times, and then we'll give you a Bible. Because we knew if we handed them out the door, people would just take them and run with them and sell them on the black market.
Right.
Those free Bibles that we had were getting about $40.
Oh, yeah, you could find them in the marketplace. You know, different stands that people had, you could find Bibles for sale there.
Because they weren't allowed to have them for years.
We just told people, hey, just come over here, we'll give you a Bible.
Yeah, we had to limit because we had so many.
Yeah.
So it was one of those things that if you come study with us for so many times, it wouldn't happen.
Oh, yeah. So. Yeah. But, you know, part of the things about learning about foreign mission work, and you get this learning, this kind of knowledge, I think, from experience. And that's what the last section on here talks about. What can I do is to go. You know, we kind of put that with this encouragement thing and learning thing, is the idea that there are a lot of things that you experience with people when you go to a foreign mission field, you go to a foreign country, and things that we just take for granted, like chalk and crayons, you know, to them, it's like, wow, this is like gold.
We were told not to take photos of our houses, cars, you know, that sort of thing. We could take pictures of our family, but, you know, not anything in the background that would be. And one of the interpreters we had asked me one time if I had a computer. And I said, yeah, and this is, the governor of this back in the 90s, this is, it's a Pentium, isn't it? He was just sure. As an American, I would.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and, but, you know, that was a big thing to have. But it just, they just didn't have it.
They don't have that kind of stuff.
And if your car breaks down and you need a part, you go to the market, and it's not like, oh, you go, I'm going to buy a new carburetor. You buy the particular piece that goes on the carburetor. They break it down to the molecule almost.
Yeah.
As far as recycling.
Because things are not always available, depending on where you are in the world. And we need to understand that foreign mission work doesn't just involve countries that are, you know, in poverty or things of that nature. You know, the gospel needs to be preached everywhere, even in, you know, wealthy countries and so forth. But a lot of folks don't have some of the things that you and I take for granted. And I remember when Katie and I were over there, when she went with me on that trip, one of the families that we were with, we talked about barbecue. You know, of course, you know, I do barbecue and all, so we were talking about, we wanted to fix them some barbecue like we have, some ribs. And we could not find barbecue sauce anywhere. We had to use ketchup. And I told him, I said, I don't know how this is going to work out, you know, because ketchup is not the same as barbecue sauce, but that's what we had. So the next time that I went over there, I took some barbecue sauce to them. You know, and they were just as happy as could be. This is real American barbecue sauce. Yeah, this is great. So a lot of things like that you don't realize, again, what some folks, what really encourages them, and just a little thing that makes a lot of difference to them. The other part of this whole thing, encouraging foreign missionaries, the work that we have been doing in Ukraine, in Zhytomyr, do you recall who the missionaries were over there? They're actually the local preacher. In other words, they're Ukrainians that live there in Zhytomyr, okay, that are doing the preaching and teaching and so forth in the church. They need encouragement also. All right. So again, my point here is that oftentimes we think of missionary work as people from the U.S. going to a foreign country and doing the work, but we have a lot of local missionaries that are working throughout the world. Which, in my opinion, is the best thing to do, okay?
We do in Japan. Masa runs.
Yeah.
And it's great because with the military church, everybody's moving in and out.
Yeah, all the time, turnover.
So he is the constant there, and so he keeps both things going, the Japanese church and the
yeah.
church.
Yeah.
You don't want Christianity to be seen as that's an American thing
right.
we're bringing. And if you've got local preachers and workers, then they see it as, you know, hey, this is just something available to anybody.
Yeah.
Plus, they know the culture and the language. And
they know the people.
Masa can talk to a Buddhist far better than I could.
Yeah. So the work that we do over in Zhytomyr, more than anything, is to encourage the local church, the local minister in the church that's there. Okay, rather than, in other words, we don't have anybody there that is an American that is there all the time teaching and preaching and so forth. And the work that they've been doing, I'm trying to remember the name of the city, but it's popped out of my head right now, trying to get another church started in another city, one that we had visited before, and they're trying to do the same thing. They're trying to find local people, ministers, to function there and to work in the church with the people there, rather than having someone from America to go there and work and try to teach. It works out so much better. The preacher that is the primary preacher, it's basically, there's three brothers that do the work, most of the work in the church there in Zhytomyr, and the main one, he had a very profitable career as a hairstylist, okay, and had been, you know, by celebrities, had been asked to come and, you know, and gone to foreign countries doing, and was making a lot of money doing that, was in high demand, and he gave that up to be able to teach the gospel there in the church. And that's what he does. Katie, my daughter, was really excited when she went. They were talking about, you know, themselves and so forth, and he actually offered, and he did, cut her hair for her while she was there. You know, so she could say, hey, I had my hair done by a well-known celebrity hairstylist. But we need to think about those kinds of things in terms of the foreign mission work. What kinds of things can we learn about foreign mission work and about perhaps maybe a specific work that's going on that might help us to encourage the missionaries that are there, the people that are working there, and again, might even encourage us to participate more, by to actually go and see the work and be participate in the work and so forth. Just by doing that, we can encourage those missionaries, and we can be encouraged ourselves in the work of the Lord and sharing the gospel with other people. Okay? Any other thoughts on that at all?
Sometimes
questions, comments?
Sometimes you just need to know that something is possible.
Yeah.
So many times we'll look at a situation like going to China and say, how could I possibly have a missionary trip there? But when people come back and they say, I've been there and I've done that, and
right.
this is how you do it, then they can do it, and that means other
so can
people
I.
can do
yeah.
it. Somebody's got to be first, but we can learn from whoever is brave enough and has the perseverance to be the first in a particular area.
Yeah. I know the first missionary trip I ever took when I went down to Panama was when I was preaching down in South Carolina. We were fully supporting the missionary there, and in my trip there, the church paid for all of my expenses. I went as one of the elders, it was kind of the church paid everything to go. When I came here and we were getting involved in the work in Ukraine, and it's like, yeah, you know, I want to go and do that, and I had a lot of encouragement from folks here, but the big issue was, where's the money going to come from?
In there.
You know, it costs a lot of money to fly all the way to Ukraine. And the one thing that I found tremendously encouraging was not only did I get some support specifically from the church, out of the church budget, but membership here was so generous to just say, yeah, you know, we want to help out with that. And we didn't have any problem raising funds for us to go on those trips. And that was always very, very encouraging doing that. So those are also ways that we can be involved in the mission work. The one thing that we have to be careful about, though, that we don't fall into the trap of just simply saying, well, my involvement is writing a check. If I write a check, then that's all I want to do. Even churches can kind of fall into that trap. And last time I told you, I was going to tell you a little bit about the work that we had going on in Panama. That we had a missionary that, again, we were fully supporting. We were his, as the term is, sponsoring congregation. He was an American who was married to a woman from Panama. And he'd been there, and he had this plan, you know, that he had put together for, you know, doing this work there in Panama. And we were his supporting congregation. He got some support from some other individuals that he had, you know, gotten up and everything, but we were primarily supporting him for that work. Basically, where it had gotten to by the time I became an elder there, where it really had gotten to was that all we were doing primarily was just sending him a check every month, you know. And it had been several years since anybody from the congregation had even been there to visit and see what was going on with the work. But what was happening was that we were kept getting letters from him and stuff saying, I need this and I need that and I need this and I need that and so on and so forth. And, you know, we were trying to provide and everything. It was always something more and something more and something more. Basically, to give you an idea, and this is one of the things you kind of have to be careful about in terms of foreign missions sometimes, especially when it's Americans going to a foreign country. They want to try to make their home in the foreign country like it is in America, and that was his attitude. He basically told us that we needed to be paying him like we would a military officer pay while he was there in this foreign country. That's what he expected. And he had this plan that he put together initially, and what he was going to do. His whole work was all around the idea of we're going to have this model farm, is what he called it, so we can teach the people there how to grow their own food and so forth, and then they can be, you know, independent and so forth, self-sufficient and all that. Well, you know, he started out with he needed a rototiller to be able to rototill up his, you know, gardens and so forth to be able to use. And that when that broke down, then he needed a tractor. And he wanted us to provide him a tractor. And, you know, part of my whole thing with all this and all, that was just some of the things. You know, he needed a boat so that he could get from there to Panama City and all, you know. And it's like, I said, okay, how many of the people that you're teaching how to have this farm and do this farm work, how many of them have access to a rototiller, let alone a tractor? And the answer to that is none. Okay, so how are you teaching them how to do this on their own when they don't have access to the things that you're using? You see? And, you know, so part of our purpose in going down there was to find out what in the world is going on in this work and so forth. And we got there, and he had the biggest house in the whole village, the only house that had running water in it, which I was partially grateful for because we actually got to take showers while we were there and so forth. But this was the only house that had running water in it. And he had a big house. And, you know, it was kind of one of those things where basically what it amounted to is that he wanted to live in Panama where his wife was from, and he wanted us to support his living there. And he wanted to live more of an American lifestyle in a foreign country. And so after coming back from that trip and experiencing all that with him and his attitude about it all, we basically, as an eldership, decided that we were not going to continue supporting that because it's not what mission work is really all about. See? So my point in all that is only that We want to encourage missionaries as much as we can, but sometimes we gotta be wise about what we're doing, and sometimes we need to go, hey, this is not what should be happening here. It's not that we want you to be living in poverty while you're here, but you don't need to be living as, you know, the king of the village, and you know, and you're supposed to be trying to show these people how to do things that they can't do because they don't have what you have.
And what message is it sending them to?
Oh, it didn't send a very good message.
Because you need to, in order for it to work, you need to be with them.
With them.
We lived one trip. I kind of ended up being the dorm mom, if you will, because we had some female translators who were in from out of town. So a bunch of us girls lived in this house together, and we lived together. That was one of the best experiences ever, because we lived in a house that we rented an entire house out for just us, and we ate together and we worked together, and that's the best way to reach people if you're living in the king's mansion or whatever.
Yeah.
And I have my doubts that they even had the people in there a lot. Totally different situation, maybe, if they're using that as a place for them to meet or something. But
I will say this. You know, there are good experiences culture-wise. You get to experience a lot of things you never have before. But I will never eat iguana again. I had to try it.
Do you really want to go into the gross food thing? Because Dale can pop you.
All right. So next week we will start on, and I anticipate us maybe taking 2 weeks to cover lesson number 12 in this series, and then we will be finished with that. All right? Thank you all very much.
Thank you.